Today is the court-ordered deadline for the Trump administration to reunite all the children it separated from their parents at the southern border. The separations happened under a tough immigration crackdown. The president called it a zero-tolerance policy.
And by the way, today I signed an executive order. We're going to keep families together, but the border is going to be just as tough as it's been.
It's part of a recent address by President Trump at a rally in Duluth, Minnesota. That was from the day he signed the order to stop separating families. Homeland Security Secretary Kirstjen Nielsen discussed the deadline on Tuesday night with Fox News anchor Brett Baer.
Well, we're on track to do it. We're working hand in glove with HHS, and it's certainly our intention to reunify all families that are suitable.
So Casey put up those numbers. I'll put up the graphic. The one that really stuck out is the 463 parents possibly deported without their children. How will you be able to reunite parents with their kids if they've already been deported?
Well, the part, it's up to the parents. So if the parents contact us and they would like to be reunited, we, of course, will work with them. But as you know, the way the process works is the parents always have the choice to take the children with them. So these are parents who have made the decision not to bring the children with them, and then we'll continue to work with the court to understand how we can best comply with the order.
At the moment, it does not quite look like the administration is going to meet its deadline. Nearly 1,000 children of the 2,500 that had been separated had not been reunited as of this morning. Part of the reason for that is that more than 450 parents were deported or left the country before reuniting with their children, as Baer mentioned. It's unclear how many voluntarily deported or were forced or coerced to. Let's speak now to Democratic Congresswoman Karen Bass. She represents California's 37th district. Last week, she was in Texas touring migrant detention centers. She also introduced a bill called the Keep Families Together Act, and she joins us from Capitol Hill. Congresswoman Bass, welcome to the program.
Thank you. Thanks for having me on.
Describe what you saw in Texas last week. Were there any particular images or occurrences that most stood out?
Yes, absolutely. But before I do that, I do have to call attention to the absolutely ice-cold, heartless response that the secretary gave. What parent on earth would just, well, maybe they decide to take them back, maybe they don't. We will reunite them where it's appropriate. We saw case after case of children that had been lied to, who were told that their parents abandoned them and that they would be in detention until they were 18. We saw parents who said they were going to a court hearing and that they would be back, be reunited with their children right away, and had no idea what happened to their children. She said that it is the responsibility of the parent. I think that is crazy. How is a parent that is deported to El Salvador supposed to get their child back? If that parent is lucky enough to find their child, the U.S. government is charging them money to get the child back. Now, they come up here because they're impoverished and they're frightened. How are they supposed to have the $1,500 to fly the child and the chaperone back into the country?
I imagine that tone that we heard from the secretary that you found
ice
so
cold.
Abhorrent and ice cold, I imagine part of that, I wonder if part of that was reflected in what you saw in Texas. Did you find a similarly unwarm reception for the people who were in those facilities?
Absolutely. Let me give you another example. One of the ways that they are covering up that they do not know where these children are and they do not know where the parents are is they are deeming that some of the children are not eligible to be reunited. That is absolutely absurd. I asked an officer, what case would you have where the parent wouldn't be eligible? And she said, well, the parent might have a conviction. I said, what kind of conviction would not make a child eligible to be reunited? Well, we had a case of a father that had a DUI. That is insanity. We have a child welfare system in this country. Even if you physically abuse your child, the child is taken away, but the parent goes through a hearing. It is a long process. We don't just go in and snatch children and terminate parental rights. Terminating parental rights takes many, many months. Unfortunately, in Texas, it only takes 6 months. So if you're too poor to figure out how to get your child back to you, if you know where your child is, your child lingers in foster care for 6 months. The state of Texas can terminate parental rights and put your child up for adoption. This is one of the most egregious moments in our history.
So what do you think should happen now, Congresswoman, now that it looks like the administration is not going to meet this second deadline fully?
So So my legislation calls for, first and foremost, the federal government to be responsible for the reunification. The federal government took the children away. It should be the federal government's financial and logistical responsibility to find these parents, even if they're deported. When you listen to the secretary, she acted like we were talking about, you wouldn't even talk about your pet dog that way. Well, if the parents want to get their kids back, no, it should be the U.S. government's responsibility. I saw reunifications take place, and I can't tell you that there was a dry eye in the room. The trauma that both parent and child went through. The other thing that they're doing to hide the fact that they're still separating families is that if you are a grandmother or a primary caretaker that is not a birth parent, they deem you ineligible. I saw a grandmother who was in a cage, by the way, crying hysterically. She had raised her grandchild from birth. They didn't consider her a parent and family, and they just sent her kid off to foster care.
Speak for a moment, Congresswoman, if you would, before I have to let you go, to those Americans who see this policy and think, as we've heard on our program, quite a few people have said, my heart goes out to these families. I hate to see parents separated from their children. I hate seeing these images of people kept in pens, cages, some have described them. But this is a nation of laws, and if you don't want to be treated this way, don't violate the law. Don't come across the border in a way that lacks documentation. You have to come in through the front door. What would you say to those folks?
Here's the thing. These parents are asking for asylum. That is international law that up until this administration had always been abided by. The way the administration is getting around that law, it says if you present yourself to a point of entry that we will accept your asylum claim, until you go through a process. They're blocking off the ports of entry so that they can't legally cross. They are forced to illegally cross. That is our government being complicit with them violating the law, forcing people to violate the law in order to save themselves. We do need to pay attention to the home countries. Nobody wants to take that journey. It's not like they're hopping on Southwest Airlines and then just flying to the border.
Right.
They risk their lives getting to that border.
Congresswoman Karen Bass, a Democrat representing Culver City, California, and parts of Los Angeles. Congresswoman, we really appreciate your time. Thanks for talking to us.
Thanks for having me on.
Let's continue our conversation here in the studio with Yegana Torbati, who covers immigration for Reuters. Yegana, welcome back to 1A.
Thanks for having me.
Thoughts on what we heard from the Congresswoman?
I think it reflects a lot of the chaos and confusion that's happening right now at the border. I was at the border last week, sort of in the McAllen and Brownsville area, and you could really see the efforts of the government to reunite parents and children. But the way that it was going about was resulting in a lot of confusion and just a lack of knowledge on the parts of lawyers, on the parts of the actual detention officers themselves as to where people were being taken, whether they were being released, whether they were being transferred to family detention centers, when they would actually be reunited with their children. And I think at least some of that is reflected in the Congresswoman's comments.
Now, take us back for a moment. You're going to remind us what's going on here. Why were the families separated in the first place? Remind us what the administration's rationale was.
Right. So the administration has been sort of doing these family separations on, you might say, a pilot basis for many, many months now. The earliest cases were documented sort of in November. But then later this year, sort of around May or so, the administration announced that it was going to try to prosecute everyone who crossed the border illegally for that crime, and then B, detain all those people. And so even if there were no longer going to be any exceptions for people who cross with their families, those people would still be prosecuted and detained. And if you were to, you can't actually be detained with a child in an detention center. And so by necessity, the administration said they were separating children and parents at the border. Now, they actually never got up to 100% prosecution rate because they just don't have that capacity. The best numbers that we have suggest they got to about maybe 40%, 50% prosecution rate, but that even that was a significant increase than before.
How much of what we heard from Congresswoman Bass mirrors what you saw when you went to Texas? You went just last week, as I understand.
Just last week, yeah. I mean, a lot of it was very similar. The things that she's saying specifically about which types of adults are being deemed ineligible for reunification really are reflected in the numbers and the information that the government Biden has given the federal court in a case over these family separations. You know, there are of the 2,500 children that we're dealing with here, they've deemed 1,600 eligible for reunifications. That 900 or so that are, you know, at least so far found to be ineligible include the parents who may have been deported, and also include parents who have some sort of criminal history or criminal background that the government says deems them ineligible.
We're speaking to Yegana Torbati, who covers immigration for Reuters. Let me get to some of your comments. Quite an array of perspectives on this whole immigration standoff. Chess1643 wrote on our website, the1a.org, deporting parents and keeping their children here is one of the most chilling and horrific things done by an American government in my lifetime. Many of these children will have a terrible future. RSB Sale wrote on our website, it has become clear that our immigration laws do not mean anything, at least to a lot of people. When one can enter the country illegally and stay regardless of the law, then the law is meaningless. And when one law becomes meaningless, then all of the laws become meaningless. You can't pick and choose which laws to follow, and you can't apply laws selectively based on someone's sob story. I'm Joshua Johnson. You're listening to 1A. Yegana, could you reply to that last comment, the idea about someone entering the country illegally and staying regardless of the law? Even people in the past who have entered without proper documentation have not been deported immediately. Even that is within law. Even undocumented immigrants have some form of due process.
Right. You know, there's debate over the rights to due process that non-citizens and non-residents have. But there is sort of a general understanding that we have due process in this country, even for undocumented immigrants and other types of immigrants. I will say that, you know, while and obviously the reader, the listener has a point there. Part of the issue also is that the U.S. is signatory to conventions that allow for the seeking of asylum, and that we have laws that govern granting asylum to people who are fleeing really difficult, fearsome situations in their home countries. And many of the people who crossed illegally or who presented themselves at ports of entry hoping to be allowed into the United States were fleeing very difficult situations, gang violence, domestic violence, political persecution in Central America. And the U.S. has a responsibility to process those claims.
Roger emailed, illegal migrants can't travel from Central America through Mexico to request asylum in the U.S. If they want asylum from their home country, they should request it in Mexico.
That is a debate that's actually happening right now. The U.S. officials are trying to negotiate some sort of what's called a safe third country agreement with Mexico that would allow asylum seekers to seek safe haven in Mexico. But experts and, you know, diplomats and lawyers say that Mexico's not really set up right now yet, at least to protect those kinds of refugees. And either in terms of capacity, or, and of course, Mexico has a lot of its own problems right now with drug violence. That's not seen as sort of a likely solution to this issue.
Let's talk about the deadline. Today is the deadline for the administration to meet this goal. One of our listeners emailed, what can be done if an administration simply decides to ignore a judge's order? Is there anything that can be done to force the executive branch to enforce a judicial order?
I actually haven't seen any evidence. And of course, there's been a lot of litigation during the first 17 months of the Trump administration over the travel ban and refugee issues and this issue in particular, of course. I have not seen any evidence that the administration has simply refused to follow court orders. On the contrary, when we have sort of a glimpse at internal emails or internal conversations that the administration is having, it seems that they are striving to meet, you know, deadlines and orders set out for them by the government. It's true that, of course, the judiciary doesn't have a standing army to enforce its orders, but I haven't seen yet that become really a crisis or a problem with these issues.
What is has the administration said why it doesn't think it's going to meet this deadline?
So I will say that of the 2,500 kids, it's deemed a smaller pool of 1,600 or so eligible for reunification. And in these court proceedings, the judge ruling over the case, Judge Sabra, has made clear that he believes that the deadline applies to that smaller pool of 1,600 kids, and the other 900 or so, I think he's willing to give a little bit more flexibility to the government in figuring out how to deal with those. Of course, the judge, while praising the progress that the government has made, has also made very clear that the reason they're in this mess in the first place is because of the government's lack of planning around family separations and how they would actually reunite these families.
I know we got to let you go in just a moment, but before we do, what happens to the children who were left in the U.S. without their parents? What becomes of them now?
It's very unclear. So they have, many of them have asylum cases that they're going to be pursuing. The children in many of these cases have more legal options than their parents would have had. And so they're either able to stay in the United States longer while they fight their asylum cases, or even may, you know, have a better shot at asylum and therefore be able to stay legally in the country. Many of them may be right now with family sponsors, sort of another parent or a uncle or aunt who was already in the United States. They may be in foster care. They may be in shelters. And so this is going to play out for like months and potentially years from now.
And for those families that have been reunified, what happens to them? Are they back in different detention centers? Are they on the path to deportation? What happens to them?
A large portion of them are now that they have been reunified are now eligible for fairly quick deportation. And so they may be able to, some of them may have been given past the first step in applying for asylum and therefore may be able to stay a little bit longer as they fight that case out in immigration court, but many of them already have final orders of deportation and will face fairly quick deportation back to their home country.
So this doesn't get them a reprieve from that process?
No. In fact, once they're reunified, they then sort of pass into eligibility for that deportation.
Yegana Torbati covers immigration for Reuters. Yegana, thanks for talking to us.
Thanks for having me.
Remember, you can subscribe to 1A's podcast on the NPR One app or whatever app you like. We would love it if you'd write us a review. If you're new to listening to podcasts, you'll find all the links to listen online at npr.org/1A. This program comes to you from WAMU, part of American University in Washington, distributed by NPR. Until we meet again, I'm Joshua Johnson. Thank you so much for listening. And for the questions you didn't get answered today, send them in for tomorrow's Friday News Roundup. This is 1A.